Ready to unwrap a surprise from Consumer Cellular? Experience the gift of freedom with no contract, no hidden fees, and always free activation. Here comes the holiday surprise. From now till December 31st, new customers can enjoy their second month for free. To get this holiday offer, visit ConsumerCellular.com or call 1-888-FREEDOM and use promo code PODCAST. Act before December 31st to get your second month on us. Use promo code PODCAST.
The names Rob, Lee and Richie mean one thing. Let loose.
Hey, I'm Jack Hughes from Wang Chung.
Hey everybody, this is Ivan from Men Without Hats.
Hello everybody, this is Francis Dunry from It Bites.
Hi everyone, this is Andy from Modern Romance.
Hi everyone, this is Charlene.
Hi, this is Dennis Seaton from Music TV.
Hi, I'm Nick Haywood.
Hi, this is Kevin from Fiction Factory.
And you're listening to the 80s Rewind Show podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And now, welcome your host,
the face for Radio Burgess.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, 80s Rewinders, and welcome to today's episode. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And if you have, thank you so much already. And don't forget to check out all the fantastic content and all the other interviews on this channel. Today's guest, we have the wonderful Lee Murray from the band Let Loose. We talk about him getting his first drum kit, forming the band Let Loose, and the fantastic hit single Crazy For You. Lee's doing an amazing thing. He's using his drumming skills to help people with depression and mental health issues. Please check out the link below, and if you feel someone needs it, please pass it on. He's doing amazing work, and he could really change someone's life. It's fantastic. Anyway, on to today's episode.
The 80s Rewind Show Podcast. Where the past meets the present.
If we can go back a wee tad, was your household growing up, was that a musical household?
No, not at all. Absolutely. No, I mean, no, I don't actually I think my dad had a couple of records and one of those really old-fashioned 70s kind of, you know, it looked like a sideboard and had a turntable in it. But I don't actually remember anyone sort of playing any records. My dad had a few vinyls hanging around, but no, nobody played anything. I think I was the first one to sort of, you know, dabble in music. So I don't know where I got it from, really.
And what was it that drew you to drums originally? Do you remember what that was? Was it an album? It a single?
Yeah. I was a bit of a melancholy kid. You know, I had a lot of problems at school. Very difficult times making friends. I felt a bit sort of, I don't know, I suppose disconnected. You know, a lot of kids are like that. You know, they used to call them, I think when I was a kid, they used to call you sort of emos or goths. You know, I was always dressed in black, very sort of insular, didn't really talk to people particularly. Anyway, and it was just music that changed all that. You know, once Gary Newman that I saw on Top of the Pops, and there's just something about the way he portrayed himself that connected with me. He looked a bit disconnected and a bit kind of otherworldly, and the way he kind of, and I actually found out that he's got Asperger's, so that was probably part of it on the autistic spectrum, you know. But it was particularly him and his drummer was quite upfront on this particular edition of Top of the Pops, funnily enough, and it just connected with me completely, and I thought, that's what I want to do. And it opened up a completely different world for me as a kid that had difficulty connecting with people and making friends and, you know, a bit of a loner sort of thing. And I'd sort of discovered through his records that he was sort of a bit similar. So I felt an affinity with that. And then it opened up another world to all sorts of different music and different genres. But usually it was real, very drum heavy. And I just connected with it, really.
Did you go straight to drums, or was there any instruments you tried first? Did you try guitar, piano, or did you just go straight for the drum kit?
At that point, when I was about 11, it was straight to drums. My dad knew somebody. My parents were quite pleased that I sort of found something that gave me a bit of direction, because they were a bit worried about me. And we were worried about our kids, don't we? But I was just drifting a bit. And so they were really pleased that I'd found something to sort of focus on, like a hobby, I suppose. And there was a guy that my dad knew whose son had a drum kit. So I went around there and had a go on that, and found that I had some kind of natural ability, you know, to play on it. Yeah, so that was the kind of start of it, really.
Fantastic. And did you sort of like learn traditionally, where you sort of put a record on and play to the record, or did you get lessons from anybody, or did you just...
First of all, it was just playing to all my favourite records, and then I ended up with a really big record collection, and then, you know, discovered all these amazing drummers. I mean, it opened up another world of sort of friendships, because I found out that other people were into music and bands and things, because I didn't talk to many people when I was a kid. I didn't discover that they also liked music, you know, because I just found it so difficult to make friends. But music changed all of that. And then I discovered that other mates were in bands, and then they'd lend me their records and I'd listen to them. And then I'd, you know, just investigate and hoover up everything about drums and drummers. And so it just changed absolutely everything from sort of 11, 12, and then into my teenage years. And yeah, just done it ever since.
Just fell into it, and that was that.
Yeah, I never really had a proper job, you know. That's shame, you know. I've just only ever messed about in music. But yeah, drums. I've since learned how to play keyboards a little bit, and guitar, because I knock songs together and mess about in that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's mainly drums.
Did you, as a youngster, like you said, you got drums at the age, did you sort of start gigging in bands straight away, or did you give it a couple of years, or you did?
Yeah, no, well, I probably got into my first band when I was about 12, I don't know, 12, 13, with some mates at school that I just, again, you know, discovered that were dabbling with guitars and bass vocals and things like that. So I reckon my first gig was about, 13 in a church hall somewhere.
I did the same sort of thing. Like when I used to play in bands, we played church halls and we were 15, 16. Yeah. And I was playing in a metal band at the time because I wanted to try lots of different drumming styles. And we were a metal band that had a song called Leviathan's Return, which is obviously the devil's return. We were playing a church gig, and we wondered why they didn't like the music.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. That metal bands at that age, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I got into some pretty heavy music as well, because I always thought that they were the best sort of technical drummers, you know, in that respect. And yeah, but that's funny, in a church playing that. Nobody flagged it. No,
they didn't know. It was great. So did you sort of go into like pub bands after that and sort of doing covers bands, or was you working towards sort of getting like the, when did your form let loose? Was that like later on? Is this earlier?
Well, I was in my sort of schoolboy band, if you like, the one I was talking about when I was 12, right up until I got into Let Loose. So I met Richie, the singer, when I was about 17. So I think right up until probably 16, I was still in the band that I was in when I was a kid.
So right.
Band, yeah, Distant Voices, we were called.
Fantastic.
We played in, we didn't really do the pub circuit because we were pretty young, but we just played anywhere that have us, you know, scout halls and charity things and, just that sort of thing, really. You know, hired halls and whatever. We never played any pubs. I mean, that used to be quite depressing to me, even at a young age, the idea of, you know, setting up in a pub where people aren't really interested. I mean, when we did our own gigs, we knew that if people were coming, we knew that they wanted to be there. But with a pub, unless you've already got a ready-made audience that, you know, come and see you, I always found that a little bit sort of depressing. But that was 17. I'd met Richie, so, you know, we were off.
Fantastic. Did you play the gig that I did where you're in a place where it's empty?
Oh, we had loads of those. Yeah. Oh, no, even in Let Loose, I mean, we did an agricultural show. This is prior to having a hit. So we just play everywhere, you know. I mean, this was, I don't know if we were signed or not, but we were sort of cutting our teeth and playing all over the place, trying to promote the song probably, or one of the songs. And we played, it was in a field. So they'd set us up. We turned up in full leather. I've no idea why. So we're playing our songs, and there was probably a smattering of about five quite elderly people, and we were so loud they were just doing that. Look over as we're throwing some shapes and playing these songs, and there's a bunch of cows that would just be walking across. You know, it was just the most surreal thing, you know, to witness when you're doing your best to sort of entertain a bunch of, you know, blue rinse elderly people. I mean, we just played the most bizarre places all through trying to get, you know, get the records out and get some kind of success. So we've done everything.
Fantastic. I think that's the true mark of a musician and a band. You have to do those terrible gigs, don't you?
You absolutely have to. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and quite often that's the thing that troubles me about, you know, the reality shows where suddenly young people are taken from nothing and they're immediately, they've got this massive profile because they just chucked on television, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you have to get used to the idea of rejection and playing these awful gigs where, you know, you have to learn how to deal with your audience. You have to learn your craft, sort of thing. Really, it sounds a bit old fashioned, but, and that happens rarely now, especially with reality TV. You're just suddenly this enormous TV personality, and you've not learned that kind of craft on your way up. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So that worries me, because I think that has an impact on your mental health. If you've got this fame massively to begin with, that could only last sort of a year, and then record company drops you and you're back to having to find yourself a job.
Yeah.
So that really troubles me, but it's just a sign of the times, isn't it, I suppose.
I think also it's a great way to learn the music industry when you're gigging there as well. You know the sharks, you know the fakes, you know, sort of, as you're gigging, you think, oh, that guy's talking crap, that's not
good. Yeah, you do. You cut your teeth, but it seems to be quite an old-fashioned thing to do now, playing. You used to play the circuit. There used to be certain pubs and clubs and things that you play all around London and elsewhere, you know, and you just do it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, as much as it was sort of quite a miserable experience at times, you learn who the sharks are, and you just learn to learn what you're doing, you know. So I think it's invaluable.
You met Richie when he was 17, and then you were gigging as a sort of formal version of Let Loose. When did Rob come into the picture?
We did have a guitarist prior to Rob. He was a scaffolder, and I think he went back to, you know, some people, when you're going through that drudgery, they just don't want to deal with it. And no disrespect to him, I haven't spoken to him in a long time, but you know, he probably earned really good money doing what he was doing, and he probably thought, well, I'm not doing this anymore, you know, playing these dives, you know, and sort of, it was hard work. So he left, and then, I think Richie met Rob somewhere or other, and he was pretty light-minded. He was really into quite heavy rock. Mm. You know, seeing as we were quite a fluffy pop band, you know, the individual members were into very different music, but, you know, he was into Thin Lizzy and, you know, went to Nebworth a lot and was quite a sort of metalhead. So, yeah, I mean, I think we probably met him in the early 90s, somewhere along the line. I can't remember exactly when, but...
Oh, so he was a later addition, though, like quite a late...
Yeah, slightly. Yeah. I mean, he was at the beginning of the whole... I don't know if we were even called Let Loose when he joined. Maybe we were. I can't remember. But he came in when we signed to Virgin. We had a record deal with Virgin in sort of 1990. So I don't think he'd been with us that long, so...
Yeah. And was... How did the like Crazy Few come along? Did Richie have the demo then, or were you playing that at the time live? Or
so we used to go around to Richie's house. He had a little flat in Bethnal Green, and I used to drive down there. It took me about an hour and a half, and we were down there every day, constantly sort of writing songs. He was the main writer, but we'd all sort of chuck in ideas and try and come up with songs. And actually, Crazy For You, we had quite a turbulent relationship, Richie and I. We'd had a row on this particular occasion. I can't remember. I was a bit oversensitive, and I can't remember what he said, but something upset me and I stormed off. And he was writing the sort of intro and bits and pieces of Crazy For You, and he said, I need help with this. And I stormed off and went downstairs and sat with his mum eating baked beans on toast. And actually, with Crazy For You, we never really liked it that much. We thought it was all right. It was very sort of fluffy, and but it was quite catchy, and it went through various different, you know, we worked on it a long time trying to toughen it up a little bit, but it was what it was. You know, we remixed it 100 times, trying to make it a bit more of a rock song. But, you know, the lyrics were quite sort of fluffy again and poppy. So we kind of parked it for a little while. But then Virgin really liked it, Virgin Records. And that ended up sort of, again, we produced that so many different times, changed it and rearranged it. But then we got dropped by Virgin. So again, it was all parked, and we went back to writing more songs. So it was kind of just hanging around for quite a few years, until we got re-signed to Phonogram, and they said that's the one. So
yeah, because what I like about the single is you can hear like Rob's rock guitar in it for a start. Yeah, you can hear, like, so you can actually hear the elements of the band sort of doing it. And I remember when it came out at the time, I was about 18, I think. I mean, my mates were all grunge heads, and I love Pearl Jam and Nirvana. So that single came out, and I was like, yeah, I like that record. So I had to kind of skulk off on a Saturday morning without me mates buy it.
I've had quite a few people say that to me. You know, they sort of, it's one of those, it's almost like put it in a brown paper bag and they're out of the shop. Nobody knows that you've bought it. But I mean a lot of people have said there's a quite a heavy guitar all through it. I mean, I remember actually doing the wah-wah in the verses as wah-wah guitar. On the bridges, and then Rob was just, we just allowed him, we didn't allow him, you know, he just did this sort of he had his own moment at the end of Crazy for You, where he just did what he wanted. And it's, I have a lot of people that that contact either through YouTube or elsewhere. They go, that is such a moment, you know, that guitar riff at the end. And he loved it because that's what he was into. You know, he loved, as I say, Thin Lizzy and all that kind of heavy rock. So that was his moment. Yeah, it was his. Yeah, the actual bed and the music of the song is quite rocky. It's just the fluffy.
It is. It is, yeah. I mean, no disrespect to the record, obviously, but I had to sort of go off with my mates, buy it on vinyl. Because if they'd seen me buying it, I just would have been, you know, crucified for the next five years. But, I mean, even then, you know, you can hear the rock in that song. I just treat it as a rock song rather than a pop song. That's the way I've always looked at it. Because of the guitars and the heavy drumming on it as well. Yeah. So, and you had Nicky Graham producing it as well, didn't you? You worked with the Nolans and Brass and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But it's a great record. It's a really great record. It's fantastic. That. No, honestly, it is. And then you sort of got onto the album. Was the album easy to make, or did that take you a while to do?
In terms of songs, because we'd been around for about 6 years, I think, before we got the second record deal with Phonograph. So we had a lot of songs. So I suppose it was tricky. I mean, the record companies steer a lot of that. We had quite a good relationship and quite a lot of influence with the songs. And Nicky Graham is an amazing musician and producer. I mean, I know he's done a lot of fluff as well, but he's incredible. You know, as a musician, he really is incredible. And he allowed us to, because he could have programmed everything with the drums and sort of just taken control. But we made sure all of us played on that album. And obviously we wrote, I think it was a one cover. I can't remember. Maybe that was on the second album. I can't remember. But
there was two on the second album.
Two, weren't there? Yeah. First album, it was just, we had quite a few songs to choose from. It was fun. I remember actually enjoying that process of actually finally being there and, you know, knocking an album together. It was all fine. It was a lovely studio. I mean, we started working when Queen were doing their final album. I think it was Innuendo. Was it the last
one? Made in Heaven was the last one.
What album?
As in with Freddie Mercury or without Freddie Mercury?
Yeah, with him.
That it would have been Innuendo, yeah.
Yeah. So we were knocking about in Metropolis, and we used to see Freddie, and we used to see, but we talked to Brian. I broke my sticks actually at one point, and I the tape I went.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, owner and user of Mint Mobile, with a special holiday message. If you sign up now for 3 months, you get 3 months free on every one of our plans, even unlimited. Now, I realize this is more of a holiday offer than it is a holiday message, but if you read between the lines, you can see a message in there. It says, we love you. Visit mintmobile.com/switch for the offer.
Limited time, new customer offer. Activate within 45 days. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. Unlimited customers using more than 40 gigabytes per month will experience lower speeds. Video streams at 480p. See mintmobile.com for details.
Down and got me Roger Taylor's stick, because we couldn't afford any sticks. So he said he secretly went and had Roger Taylor written on these drumsticks, and I never kept them like an idiot.
Right.
yeah. So, you know, lovely memories of that. But it was quite seamless, really. There was a bit of toing and froing with Crazy, you getting that mix right for when we released it. It was quite nice memories of that.
I mean, you've got some good singles. You've got Crazy for You 17, and is it Face to Face was the ones released off of that album?
Yeah, but Face to Face, I think, died a death. I think we pulled that one. I never liked that one at all, I've got to be honest. And I don't think any of us did. It seemed like the wrong... Again, I think somebody's had a bright idea to release that one, and we never thought that was the right way to go. So, yeah, I think Crazy 17, we had One Night Stand. I forget the order of it now, but yeah, there was a few off of it. Actually, one of my songs, which was I Don't Need It, that was actually slated as the first single before Crazy, which would have been a mistake. But that ended up, that we performed it on television somewhere, but that it never ended up being a single. So
was there much drum samples on the album? Was that you all the way through, or was it you sampled, or was there samples overlaid over you playing, kind of thing?
So with Crazy for You, we wanted to make it so initially, we thought we're just going to play it as a band. We're actually going to record it in the old-fashioned way. We're all just going to set up and we're all just going to play it. And then we had a discussion with Nicky, to my memory, and we thought, well, we want to give it a modern feel. So what I really liked doing was mixing sort of breakbeats and live drums. And it's actually really hard to do because you've got to be so in time and so locked in when you're playing over breakbeats and things like that. So we wanted to give... So Crazy Few was very straight, sort of 4-4 get into technical stuff. I mean, I know you'll know because you're a drummer, but it was quite a straight kind of groove to it. And we thought we want to make it a bit more in keeping with, you know, the sort of the grooves that were around. So there was a little breakbeat that just went dunk, 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 dunk. So I laid that one down. It's like a bar that just kept repeating. And then I played over the top of it, and it was tough because you really got to make sure you lock in. So all the feels and the cymbals and me playing, it's all over it. And that's one thing that slightly upsets me, and I shouldn't let it. If I ever read the comments on the Top of the Pops reruns and whatever, people are saying, there's no way any of them played on that. You know, it's all programmed. And I feel like answering them, but you mustn't ever do that. But saying, no, I'm playing all over it. You know, all of us are. We're all playing on that record. And we absolutely insisted that it has to. We have to be on it. But yeah, so we mixed the two a little bit. There's one or two songs where I programmed. I think there's one called Love Like There's No Tomorrow. That's all programmed apart from cymbals and hi-hats. But yeah, otherwise there's playing. Yeah, it's all played.
Like going back to your comment there, I think what it is with like drummers in particular, drummers can see drummers. And even if you look at your old footage when you were live and even if you were miming along, you could tell you're playing along with the right time signature. You're moving in the right way. Unlike Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees, who used to just hold the sticks and wave.
Well, he's a guitarist, wasn't he? He auditioned apparently for a guitarist. Yeah, he wasn't a drummer, but no, I understand it. And we were young and we were smash hits. You know, that was where we were sort of pitched. So I get it. People are, you know, people that are into, you know, real music, you know, immediately look at it, you know, with a sort of critical eye and think, oh, no, they're not musicians. But, you know, when they dig a bit deeper, and as I say, you know, Rob was absolute, he hated anything that was manufactured, absolutely hated it. And he hated the whole smash hits thing, hated mining. We all wanted to play live, but, you know, we were in that kind of bracket of boy bands. And so we just went with it for a little while. But some of it was a bit.
Was it bothering you that you weren't getting taken seriously as a band? Was that the main thing at the time that you wanted to get taken seriously?
A bit, yeah. We used to go on because we had a thing about being called a boy band, and actually looking back, we should have just not been so kind of sensitive about it because really, we kind of over-egged it a bit. I remember we went on This Morning quite a lot, and they'd say, oh, this is a boy band. We go, well, we're not really a boy band because we play, you know, we don't dance, we're not choreographed, you know, we don't do any of that. We play live gigs and we're all musicians. And actually it was, we flogged that one to death and nobody really cared. You know, they just wanted to talk about the record. You know, nobody was really interested who wrote it and whether it was written for us, you know, or anything like that. And that was a bit of a bugbear, but I should have been, I think all of us should have been a bit more relaxed about it and thought, well, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, we were really at odds with that. We just thought, no, we want people to know that we're players. And, you know, the more people bash you over the head with that, you know, the more it becomes a real bugbear. Mm. But it was what it was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, digging into your, obviously I was going to talk to you, so I was digging into the research and your albums and stuff. I didn't realise how much, like yourself and Richie wrote a lot of the stuff. I was expecting to see an old list of songwriters. I didn't realise you were that involved in it.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. I mean, to begin with, that's why we wanted to be, I mean, I suppose we could have gone two ways. We could have gone down, I mean, not that we were a soul band at all, but the wet sort of route or the Duran. But it was all just so, in the 90s, that was all so old-fashioned. You know, to say we liked Duran, that was back then. That was in the last, you know how things used to move on so quickly. It was a bit like, don't talk about Duran. Don't talk about all that stuff. You know, this is take that era and E17. And that's, you know, take your tops off and jump around. And we were just very resistant to that. And to a degree, it made us sound like we were just a bit out of touch, you know, to be talking about playing drums. If we were a bit later, maybe when Busted came along, you know, it was a bit more in fashion to play instruments. They're still kind of pop groups, but they have guitars on that. So maybe we were just a bit, we should have been in the sort of 2000s as opposed to 90s. Maybe we'd have been accepted a bit more.
And with the second album, Rollercoaster, how quickly did you get pushed into the studio to make that one? Did you have time to make and write that album, or you pretty much right back in because you've just had a hit single and the other
three? Richie was pretty prolific with his writing and we all sort of were involved a little bit more. There were a few covers on that because the hit single started to dip a little bit. I mean, Make It With You did really well. Trying to think what else was... I think one of them tanked, really tanked, which was Everybody Say Everybody Do. which we really liked. We wrote that with Nick Kershaw, but that pretty much tanked. So we made the poor decision of saying, no, we really want to leave this boy band thing behind now. We just want to be what we are, which is a rock pop band.
Mm.
And it was a mistake. You know, it really was a mistake. We should have just probably carried on with, much as I love Nick Kershaw, I think he's amazing. We probably should have gone again with Nicky Graham and done a slight change from where we were, but made it much more gradual. But yeah, with Roller Coaster, we just sort of turned into this more of a sort of rock pop band, and we just got more entrenched in just the whole live thing, you know, and touring and whatever. And people didn't like it. They just wanted Crazy for You Mark II, I suppose. Mm.
Is it play the same song? Just keep playing. Yeah.
Well, as I say, you know, Make It With You did really well. I mean, I think that was that got in the top 10, I think.
Yeah.
And again, I'm trying to think what else came off of that.
You had Darling Be Home Soon. That was the second one.
Yeah, absolutely tanked. That was terrible. I mean, I like the song. It's a beautiful old song, you know.
Yeah. On Sebastian.
Lou Cocker did a cover of it. It was amazing. Yeah, no, the whole album, it was just a bit of a disaster, really. I mean, a lot of people contact me and say I prefer it to the first one, but they're more Muse over the people that like the second one.
No.
Yeah, but it just didn't work for us, you know, and we made a mistake, and then the record company got cold feet. So,
and is this the sort of point where the band wound down as well after the second album? Have you got, well, do you we just have enough?
It was mainly Richie and I, but we just weren't getting on. So, and to be honest, without going into detail, which is probably not what this podcast is about.
Oh,
you know,
no, of course.
Yeah, my mental health went really down the toilet, so I had to be very careful. And I thought it's just time to go, you know, and sort of reevaluate what I want to do. So I was the first one to jump, and then sort of Rob followed. I think they were going to try and carry on, get another drummer in, you know, and then Rob disappeared, and then off we went.
What I loved about your two albums at those times is you didn't come back with the obligatory swing album. You know, there was no Little Loose Does Sinatra and all that sort of rubbish.
No. I mean, as I say, I mean, the Roller Coaster was probably a taste of where we wanted to be, which was just a rock, you know, quite a rock outfit. I mean, we love pop melodies, you know, really, really strong melodies.
Yeah.
But yeah, we wanted to, and it just, I don't know whether it was just old fashioned at the time. As I say, it was all boy bands and E17 in that kind of smash hits genre. And we just ended up sort of just not fitting in. So we didn't fit in with anyone. You know, I think that was probably, you know, why we disappeared. You know, people didn't really understand where we were going, what we were doing. And as I say, if it was maybe in the 2000s, it would have been a different story, but not so much in the 90s.
It's like, the audience wasn't ready for the band almost.
No, maybe not. I mean, maybe it was songs. I don't know. I mean, I really liked Everybody Say, Everybody Do. But then maybe it's just because I enjoyed playing it. You know, it's just fun song to play, but it didn't connect really with people, and radio didn't particularly like it. Again, they just wanted, you know, Crazy for You, and we were done with all that, to be honest.
Yeah. In 2009, you released the Paint It Gold album, and I was playing that the other day.
Yeah.
That's a really nice album, and it's definitely a different Let Loose album because it's a mature album.
Yeah. I mean, so we did, Richie and I wrote the single Paint It Gold. Actually, that picked up some radio play. I think Steve Wright played it. And there was another guy. Actually, that was a three-way co-write. There was another guy, really successful writer. I'm afraid his name escapes me, but a really established guy, a great, fantastic songwriter. And I quite enjoyed that, actually. We did a little video, and that connected to a degree, but without a record company, we couldn't get any traction with it. You know, I think really it was just a coming together with Richie and I to sort of do an album that we really wanted to do. He'd written a lot of songs, and we gigged that as well. Sort of the odd, we did a really kind of, where were we? I think it was 93 Feet East. It was in the East End. We did a gig playing that, which was good fun to see all the old faces again. And then Richard and I fell out again. So at the end of that. So it was proper rock and roll falling out, you know, and that's just how it happens.
I think if Painted Gold was your second album, if you could sort of rearrange time, I think that would have been a more successful album in the 90s, I think.
I think it may be, yeah. Because I think Painting Gold might have been a better follow-up on Roller Coaster. I think that's a good point. I never even thought of that. But yeah, that's a good point.
Because when I was listening to it the other day, it had that mature sort of band sound, which was then creeping through. Not necessarily you had the Britpop stuff and you had the grunge from Nirvana, but there was another sort of, there was a lot of bands circling at the time that were sort of like, who am I thinking of? Counting Crows and things like that.
Yeah.
So and I think that album would have fitted in that category. I think.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, maybe times just shift and fashions shift a little bit, don't they? I mean, so if you think of some of the, I'm thinking of Lewis Capaldi maybe, and some of the more, the sort of modern, back then it was all about the way you looked and it was all about the sound and things like that. I mean, now everything is just wide open. You don't have to be aesthetically, you know, look a certain way. You know, I mean, you can look like, I mean, Ed Sheeran, I think there's nothing wrong with the way he looks at all, but you know, back then it was all about aesthetics. It was all about taking your top off. It was all about being really handsome and, you know, in the pop genre.
Yeah.
And it was just whether you were, we just, in the end, that was absolutely sick of all that, you know, because we just wanted people to listen to the songs, you know, and enjoy the music. So it's much, much more open now. So I think you're right. That's been like that for a while. So maybe if we were around and we were pitching that as a second album with that with Paint It in Gold as the lead single, then it could have been different. Yeah.
So let's talk about what you're doing now, because you're doing a wonderful thing with drums. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, going back to me moaning about what I was like when I was at school, which was just having sort of various difficulties. I didn't know it at the time, but drums kind of saved me to a degree, because I was that bad. You know, I was it was very dark. And it was only when I discovered music, there was no music therapy. It wasn't really heard of, or at least I wasn't aware of it back in the sort of 80s. And so I drilled down into that as I've got older and, you know, looked at why drumming was such a sort of significant thing for me to find in my life. And then, you know, I looked at all the studies that I didn't even know existed from the Royal College of Music and various other sort of universities. And yeah, just discovered that there's this really close connection with particularly, I mean, music therapy, you know, is a sort of large umbrella with all different sort of genres of music. And then we all know the benefits of music in general, but particularly drumming seems to do something very, very positive to people with, you know, anxiety and depression and, you know, autism, ADHD. So it's been my life's work now to spread the word as much as I can, to get people, young people, to pick up drumsticks and try it. If they're in a dark place or they have any kind of neurodiversity, not exclusively, because I teach people that are neurotypical as well. But I've seen what a difference it can make to people, and I just absolutely love it. You know, I work with quite profoundly autistic individuals, some that have Asperger's and just struggle a bit, some people that are anxious, and I can see, you know, they have one lesson and they leave with a massive grin on their face. And yeah, I love it.
I really do.
That's amazing. We'll put a link in the description for your website so people can find that as well that are listening.
Thanks, man.
No problem. So looking forward, will there be sort of maybe another incarnation of Let Loose, maybe doing an acoustic gig or a one-off gig or anything like that for Let Loose fans?
I only had a couple of messages the other day on Facebook, and someone actually said, and I was absolutely floored by this, they said that they'd finance a gig.
Nice.
And I thought, that's amazing, really. I would never, ever think that anyone would have even been remotely sort of interested or that interested in a gig. And we get offered stuff all the time, you know, retro 90s gig. There's loads of them. You know, you're aware of them, right? All the festivals and so on. Yeah. Richie and I just don't speak, you know. I've not spoken to him for years, and I just think he doesn't want to do it, and I understand it completely. You know, he's parked the whole thing. He's off doing, I don't really know what he does now, but you know, he's
been doing artwork.
Oh, there you go. Okay, yeah. I know he was dabbling in that, yeah. And I think he's quite happy just to do that, and I understand it. And you've got to respect it, really. So I can't see. I think it'd be nice to do it, even one, you know, just to get all the crowd, all the kids that used to follow us around are now sort of, you know, parents themselves, and, you know, and sometimes it's a nice thought to do something, but, well, I just can't see it happening. We're pretty old. We're pretty old, you know.
Yeah, but you look great. Yeah. If it comes around, please let me know, because I'm sure we'd love to go. Like, I'd definitely go.
Thank you.
Lee, it's been amazing chatting today. Thanks for your time, mate. It's been brilliant.
My pleasure. It's lovely to talk to you.